Hello, everyone, and welcome to Q&A. I'm Jay Nordlinger, and this podcast is brought to you by Fast Growing Trees for the beautification of your surroundings. I'll have more to say about our sponsor later in the program. Our guest today is a favorite of this program and a favorite of mine, Natan Sharansky, or Natan, as I think they say in Israel. Long ago, he was Anatoly Sharansky, the Zek, the political prisoner in the Soviet Gulag. He is the author of one of the greatest prison memoirs ever penned, Fear No Evil. The most recent of his books is Never Alone, Prison, Politics, and My People. He's the chairman of the Institute for the Study of Global Antisemitism and Policy. For the Washington Post, he has written an important op-ed, an op-ed that relatively few are equipped to write. It's headed, Why Putin's Repression is Worse Than What I Endured Under the Soviets. Natan Sharansky, hello. It's a pleasure to see you.
Hello, thank you for inviting me.
I can't help thinking that it's happening again. Again, we, especially you, were through with it in the early 90s. Yes, and life was moving on. And according to Memorial, the Memorial Society, now banned, of course, there are more political prisoners in Russia today than in the late Soviet period. And you understand these prisoners, Navalny, Karamurza, the rest of them, better than most could. Give us an opening statement, if you like.
Well, I want to say that it's really surprising, unfortunate, to see how quickly and easily all the achievements of fighting for democracy can be dismantled. And in fact, in few months, well, in few years, but in fact, effectively in the last year, Putin took Russia back to the days of Brezhnev and even further to the days of Stalin. And maybe the most sad thing is to see that there is, first of all, there is no revolt of millions in Russia. There are people who are resisting, and there are first heroes of the dissident movement who go to prison, and we'll talk in a moment. But there is no massive resistance, not that millions of people discovered that they are put behind the Iron Curtain again. And the world, which of course is in big confrontation because of the war, barbaric aggression of Russia against Ukraine, but it seems that the world doesn't understand how quickly the totalitarianism is reconquering the free world. And I can tell that in many aspects, situation today is worse than it was before. But there are some things which make it easier or which didn't exist in those days. I would say there are only two things which Putin yet didn't take away and which make a difference. Putin didn't stop the immigration, yes. So there is still an opportunity to leave for those who want. And of course, it's a huge difference from the days of our struggle when it was really prison for everybody. And the second thing is that the political prisoners can have lawyers who can see them and through whom they can send letters. That's how I received in the last months the letters from two of the most distinguished political prisoners, Karamurza and Navalny. And they describe how important my memoirs and the other books of that time, reading them in the prison. That's also something which didn't exist in my days, because it helps them to connect between the times and to understand how everything changed, but nothing has changed. And speaking about, please.
Natan, you had a heroic wife, Avital. Vladimir has Yevgenia, and Navalny has Yulia. What is their job now?
Yeah, I have to say, I personally had an opportunity to watch Yevgenia working, appealing, speaking to the masses. And I think Vladimir should be very lucky to have such a wife. In fact, I always speak, when I speak to the people, I'm joking that if you decide to go to prison, you first have to have the wife as I had. Well, I have, in this case, both Karamurza and Navalny are really lucky and they have heroic wives. But as my wife, Vitaly, speaking to Elena in the days of the sentence of her husband, she spoke with her by telephone from Jerusalem, and she told her, Elena, you'll have now a very difficult work of keeping this name, not only in these days, when he's sentenced to 25 years, and he made such very courageous, a little courageous speech in the court. No, in the first week, maybe it will be easier, but then there'll be months and years, and God forbid, more, many years, and to keep it in the center of attention is very difficult. And it will be your main effort in the years to come. And of course, she sends her all the words of encouragement and strengthening. But we have to understand it's really, it's extremely important now that every day the leaders of Russia will hear these names and will be reminded that the world will never excuse them, that the world will never accept them as partners in anything when they're having this barbaric war and when they have these barbaric sentences of keeping people like Volodya or Alexei for dozens of years. In fact, they got life sentences to spend their life in prison. And it's clear to me that as long as Putin is in power, he's going to keep them in prison. And that's something which we should not accept. And that's something we should not let free world to accept or to forget. And that's a big challenge to their heroic wives, to make sure that the world will be fighting for them every day.
Natan, as you pointed out in your article, Navalny survived one murder attempt by poison. Karamurza survived two murder attempts by poison. Both of them were abroad, especially for medical treatment, and both of them went back to certain or near certain arrest, imprisonment, who knows? And you know exactly why they did this, and you use the example of your friend, the great Hong Konger, Jimmy Lai.
Yeah. First of all, it's not that it could be possible that they will be arrested. They knew that they'll be arrested. And in fact, when Navalny went and he knew that he'll be arrested at the airport, and that day after he was arrested, one of the, I think she was BBC journalist, she asked me by telephone, but we all understand that he will be arrested. Is he so naive? Or so not clever that he doesn't understand that he'll be arrested. And I really became infuriated almost. I said, I think you don't understand something, that if his aim is not to save his life, he will never do it. But if his aim is to continue mobilizing his own people on this struggle, so his message by going there to Russia was, I am not afraid. You should not be afraid. And you cannot deliver this message by words. You can deliver it only by your life. And that's why I quoted my friend Jimmy Lai, who was 72 years old when the leader of Hong Kong resistance movement, the head of the biggest internet newspaper in Hong Kong, very rich person, is preparing himself to be arrested, maybe for the rest of his time. And we are discussing through Zoom situation. And I tell him, Jimmy, but you're a rich person. You can easily have a private airplane. Probably you have private airplanes. You have British citizenship. And Hong Kong still, with all the tough situation, is not yet China behind the Iron Curtain. Can't you escape? And he said, probably I do, but will not be betrayal of my people. I'm leading the struggle. They believe me. I'm saying that we have to fight this regime. And then they run away. So these people like Karamurza, Navalny, Jimmy Lai, they feel themselves so much part of this historical struggle against dictatorship. And they cannot permit themselves to say one thing, to call people to fight, and then to run away. So this full integrity that you're part of this struggle, you're part of your people, you're part of this determination to fight for freedom, you cannot abandon them. You have to be with your people. So yes, Karamurza and Navalny and Jimmy Lai knew exactly that they'll be arrested probably to the end of their lives or to the victory. And they are part of this struggle for the victory, and they understand that there are things which are more important for them than their personal survival.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are listening to who else, the one and only Natan Sharansky. I am Jay Nordlinger doing Q&A. Back after this word from our sponsor. Breathe some life into your backyard with fastgrowingtrees.com this spring. Shade, fresh fruit, privacy, natural beauty. Let fastgrowingtrees.com help you plant your dream garden with their expert advice and fast, reliable shipping. The plant experts at fastgrowingtrees.com curate thousands of easy-to-grow plant, shrub, and tree varieties for your unique climate, from Meyer lemons to evergreens and everything in between. Happy plants, happy home, right? But sometimes it's hard to know which plants will do best. No problem, because with fastgrowingtrees.com, you get customized recommendations based on your specific needs. Plus, their plant experts are always available to help keep your plants growing healthy through the season and beyond. No more waiting in long lines and hauling heavy plants around. With fastgrowingtrees.com, you order online, and your plants arrive at your door in just a few days. I love plants and trees of all kinds, but I don't have what you would call a green thumb. Fastgrowingtrees.com is wonderful for a guy like me. It's just so easy. They make it so easy for you. Even the green-thumbed will appreciate it, I'm sure. And with FastGrowingTrees' 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, you know everything will look great fresh out of the box. Join over 1.5 million happy Fast-Growing Trees customers. Go to fastgrowingtrees.com/QA now to get 15% off your entire order. Get 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com/QA. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Q&A. I'm speaking about Russia, Ukraine, etc. with Natan Sharansky. You taught me something a long time ago, not just me, but taught the world. It had to do with what you might call Russian or Soviet public opinion. You said there are three groups: true believers, true supporters of the Kremlin, true believing idealistic communists. There are outright dissidents who forthrightly oppose the regime and risk arrest, imprisonment, torture, death, etc. And those two groups, you said, are tiny, very small, very few true believers, very few dissidents. And in between, you said, and you were borrowing from Orwell, there are double thinkers. Is the same true today?
Well, Jay, I said it not only about Kremlin, not about Soviet Union. I said that all the dictatorships, that all the dictatorships have these three groups of people. Those who believe to this dictator, or those who are really sincerely follow the dictator and their ideology, those who are ready to resist and to sacrifice sometimes their own life, definitely their freedom, and majority. And the longer dictatorship exists, the number of those who are double thinkers, who really don't believe into this hypocrisy, who see more and more proofs how false it is, but who are not ready to speak, becoming bigger and bigger, double thinkers. Double thinkers are becoming the main part of the society under dictatorship. And the real revolution is happening when there is a massive move of double thinkers into dissent, when they overcome this fear. So no doubt, today Russia went back very quickly, unfortunately quicker than all the theorists could predict, very quicker to the country with the majority of double thinkers. People are controlled by fear. People are afraid to speak against Putin's aggression, though nobody except Putin himself is really interested in this war. But people are afraid, and majority of people shows their loyalty, their hope of the victory of Russia. Well, when there are people put into prison for many years for expressing criticism of this war, and no doubt that majority of people are not ready not only to go to prison, but to sacrifice their career. So they're becoming double thinkers. And the only hope is that people, this virus of freedom, which is kept by people like Karamurza, Navalny, Yashin, and a few others, that this virus will be catching, and more people will choose between this slavery of doublethink and freedom of dissent.
And Natan, in your recent op-ed piece, you were talking about remembering the Moscow-Helsinki group. This has just been banned, of course, by the Kremlin. And I was reading the list of founders of the group, and there are so many heroes of my youth. You yourself were young. Sakharov, of course, your rabbi, your teacher, Bonner, his wife, Yuri Orlov, Andrei Malrik. You told me that he predicted exactly how the Soviet Union would dissolve. You know, these are my heroes. And then most of them are gone. And yet there are new people today in Russia fighting. It's both discouraging because people have to do it all over again in just a generation or two. But at the same time, these people are great. Karamurza is great. And I don't know what else to say. It's just so very painful. It's so very painful in our own lifetimes to see it again. Say whatever you like, Natan. I'm just rambling.
Well, I have to say that no doubt these people are real heroes. And Karamurza not only went back to Russia knowing that he will be arrested, he was sentenced to 25 years. The last person who was sent to 25 years for political activity were in the days of Stalin, or immediately after his death. Even in the days of Brezhnev, we didn't have such jobs. Now, Navalny, who had really such a spectacular way, unmasked in front of all the world, made KGB in front of all the world to recognize that they tried to poison him. And then he came back, and not only they are keeping him in prison, they're keeping him in very tough conditions. In a year and a half, he was already spent almost 200 days in punishing cell. I want you to understand, I spent 405 days in punishing cell during 9 years, and it was considered like kind of record, unbelievable how it can be. Now, he definitely will defeat me in this.
Breaking your record.
I wrote him that I hope very much that he will not succeed to beat my record and that I will remain a champion, because I really hope that he will never, he or somebody else will never have such an awful thing. In a year and a half, he spent 200 days in punishing cell. You understand, punishing cell is a small, dark, cold room. You don't have anything to heat yourself. Three pieces of bread, cups of water a day, and in 15 days maximum that you are supposed to become crazy. And we have to spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of days. If he'll continue with the same speed, so in 10 years, he will have like 2 years of punishing himself. Well, even more, 3 years. So these are unbelievable conditions and unbelievable long sentences exist after we thought that we already defeated this regime. So on one hand, it's bad. On the other hand, they have our experience. And they have, if before when Andrei Malarik was predicting in his book whether the Soviet Union will survive until 1984, of course, he took it from Orwell, 1984, but it was like 15 years ahead in 1969. Everybody thought how crazy he is to describe, to predict the falling of the Soviet Union, which American leaders to the very end believed that it's forever. And until Reagan, everybody believed that Soviet Union is forever. So today, when they're speaking, when Karamurza was speaking in his final speech, that the failure of this regime is as inevitable as spring coming after the most tough winter. They know on what their optimism is based. So today it is proved that it is possible to win this awful dictatorship. So that's why I hope that their optimism is justified and that we, the free world, will prove that you cannot really take all the history of humanity back and to dismantle developing democracy and turn it back to the most barbaric dictatorship.
Well, Natan Sharansky, I have a friend named Felix Maradiaga. He's a Nicaraguan democracy leader, just released after 2.5 years in prison, El Chipote in Managua, many days in solitary confinement. And he said he spent a lot of time thinking about conversations he had had in the past, even things like movie scripts, movie plots he could remember. He composed a couple of talks in his head. And I was thinking, I believe you did a lot of math and played a lot of chess mentally. And to keep your sanity must be a huge challenge. And I think about these prisoners a lot, how they keep their sanity. And you came out seemingly unscathed. And I mentioned this, as I think I told you, to Bukowski. And I said, why is Natan so at peace? Why is he so calm and straight? And he said they never broke him. Huge challenge. Please.
Yeah, well, when you tell about your friend from Nicaragua who was going back to all the film scripts, that's true. You not only you have to keep your world, the world that you remember inside you, but it has to prove you that they're wrong. Like KGB was explaining me how I'm abandoned, how everything changes. The first year and a half when I'm under interrogation, I don't get a word from the outer world. I have no idea what's happening. They make sure that no newspaper, no radio word will reach me. And then they're trying to explain you what is now really happening, how everybody is arrested, how the world jury is afraid to mention our names, how the world leaders believe that I'm an American spy, and so on. And you have to build your own world. You have to think about your people and your country and all those journalists that you met, what they're doing now, and what is your wife and friends are doing now. You compare with what was in the past, which what you imagine in the future. And then you're creating your own world. And what's interesting, when you're released, you know that what your imagined world was a real one, and the world of KGB was a false one. So it is really very important, based on your memories of the world, of the people, of the struggle, to build how it continues today, and not to give up to the pressure of KGB. But the second thing is how to rationally to... So morally, you have not to give up to say no to KGB. But it's not enough, because your brain inevitably will take you into the places which will be weakening you. So I had a very simple weapon, is chess game, because it was my big hobby from the age of five. I discovered that there is the world in which you can be free, where Soviets cannot control your thoughts. And also I discovered that you can beat people who are taller than you. And because everybody was taller than me, here was my revenge. And my theory was that the taller person is, the quicker I have to win him or her in chess. So it was quite a very interesting during my childhood. But then when you're becoming the champion of your school and your city, you're looking for more challenges. And then I started playing simultaneously. And then playing chess, blind chess, without looking at the board. And simultaneously blind. And so on. But it was all hobbies, simply for entertainment. Suddenly in prison, it's not a hobby anymore. They want you not only to be in isolation. Isolation I was for many years, but to be in the punishing cell where you suffer from the darkness and from you don't have opportunity to say, to talk to anybody, to write anything, then you can play chess. And I played thousands and thousands of games, and you're winning in each of them because you have enough time to win. And then you can turn over the board and to play for the other side and to improve the game of the previous. So you not only are winning, but you're improving your playing all the time. So it gave you a lot of rational encouragement, rational food for thought. So on one hand, you're trying to imagine the world as you see it and to believe that that is the real world of the struggle of your friends, of your country, who are not abandoning you, who continue the struggle. And on the other hand, you have to be to remain a rational person, not to live in your dreams. And for this, you have such a good weapon as playing chess. So I say to everybody, if you are thinking seriously to go to prison, you have to learn how to play chess in your head, and you have to marry the way I married, to have the same fighting wife as I have.
Two great advantages. I think I've heard you say the biggest mistake the KGB ever made was letting Avital out of the country.
Of course they made a big mistake, thinking that because we are young and impatient, so they'll take you to Israel, they'll keep me in prison, and they break us.
Yeah.
Thank God. They didn't understand then many things and made a lot of mistakes, and I hope they don't understand now many things, and we will use their mistakes.
Natan, this is a very delicate question, a sensitive question. I always took my lesson from Reagan, who was very careful to separate the government, a dictatorial government, from the people. He was insistent on making that distinction. But here is my blunt and rude question. Is the war on Ukraine, the assault on Ukraine, a Putin Kremlin thing or a Russian thing?
Well, I believe it is the war of one person, Putin. But in order to make his people to go with this decision, he appealed to old instincts of Russian Empire. He appealed to this sort of the star. You are those who fought in order to keep Russia big and strong. And you are those who defeated Nazism. And so we are now going to fight against new Nazism and for our desire to bring back this magnificent influence which Russian people had all over the world. Putin said many times that he believed that the biggest tragedy of the 20th century is the destruction or dismantling of the Soviet Union. And once in those days, first years that I was talking to him, and we had a number of meetings, I said, but isn't the biggest tragedy the Holocaust? He said, of course, you know that how much I respect, and really he has a very positive attitude to Jews, and he is very sympathetic to their tragedies, but for the modern world, and of course for Russia, the biggest tragedy was, well, he didn't say the Russian Empire, he said Soviet Union. But for him, really, the most inspiring thing of the past was Russian Empire. His real leaders to follow the example was always Peter the Great and Ekaterina the Great and he didn't speak until recently, but also Stalin. So these are three big figures who are collecting these so-called collecting Russian lands. And he sees that his historical mission is to rebuild the Russian Empire. But speaking to, he wants this war. Nobody's really interested in this war. But he appeals to these instincts of, we were great people, we had such an influence, positive influence on the world. Now we are deprived of it, we want to restore it. And that we were great in defeating the biggest enemies of Russia and of the world by fighting Nazis. And now this is coming back again. And that's why he came with two slogans. First, that Ukrainian regime is Nazi regime. And second, that Ukrainians are not real nation. The place of Ukraine is in Russia. These are the two slogans with which he appealed to his own people. Just a few days, his famous speech, a few days before aggression. By the way, that's when I understood that aggression is inevitable. But he said in such a clear and simple terms, Ukraine is not a nation, it belongs to us, and we will bring it back. And that this is neo-Nazi regime. These are Nazis of today. It is our role of Russian people to defeat them again. So that's how personal war of Putin was turned, or he tried to turn it into the struggle of Russian people. Now, the polls show that like 70% of Russian people support Putin. How many of them are really supporting, we can't say. Under dictatorship, we can never say it. But again, we are going back to this scheme of true believers. And no doubt that there are people who are glad to rebuild the great Russian Empire, which was giving so much pride to the people then. There are, and who are double thinkers, those who really are upset or maybe even angry that they have to risk their lives to participate in this senseless war, but who are scared to death. Even if you publicly say that is aggression, you'll be put in prison for a few years. So why to try? And it's very sad to see how many people, how millions and millions of people go along with this lie and are not ready to challenge it publicly.
Bukovsky made a point, and I wonder whether you agree. He said that Soviet leaders, Russian leaders, they have this trick. They use the word encirclement. The West is encircling us. NATO is threatening us. And Bukovsky said something very caustic and very bitter. He said, trust me, I've lived in the West for 40 years. No one here gives a damn about Russia. But the leaders are always pretending that the NATO wolf is at the door. And I wonder whether people believe this or they know it's a kind of trick.
Well, it's a complicated question. First of all, that's the way of historical thinking of Russian tsars, or even before the tsars. It was only Moscow gubernia. We go back to 900 years ago, and you look how then the future Russian tsars, or they were, I don't know how, the leaders, the knights of those places, how they were explaining why they have to go and to fight against their neighbors. Because they're beyond in danger. Our way of life is in big danger because they threaten us, and we have to conquer more territory in order to protect them. With this slogan, they went to Volga, then they went to Siberia in 100 years, approximately, or then reached the borders of Japan and China. All the time, it was the explanation was that they're threatening us. And definitely to the West, that's how there were wars with Lithuania and with Poland and all these agreements about taking parts of Poland and Crimea and other lands, in order they will not threaten to us, to Russia, to those who want to, or we will keep our way of life, And for this, we have to have more territory, or they will impose their way of life. That's why we have no choice. And that was more or less the idea of every patriotic, in fact, imperialist war, which Russia had in the last 600 years. And it's interesting how the Soviet Union in my days was explaining that we are sending tanks to Hungary and to Czechoslovakia in 1968, because NATO, the West, is trying to come to our borders and to threaten Russia. And that's why we cannot permit them to come closer to us. We have to protect our communist bloc, our communist world. And that's why, yes, we have to keep every country that they could bring under their control, they were bringing. And even when Russians sent their missiles to Cuba, if you remember,
yes,
in 1960 or so, mm-hmm. and when it became public, the explanation was that because they're threatening to our way of life, they want to conquer us, so we have to keep our missiles on Cuba in order America will not conquer us in Europe. That was the logic presented to Soviet people. That was, I remember, the big explanation when finally Russian ships who were all in Black Sea moved to the Mediterranean. What to do to the Mediterranean? They said, that is the only way how we can defend our borders in the Black Sea. So that is the logic of all the time. Now, to what extent people buy it? The sad thing is that some people do buy it. And some people today in Moscow are explaining, there are many interviews which are taken in the street. Many people are afraid. Some say sincerely what they think. Very rarely, some say sincerely that condemn the regime. But there are such people. But there are many who say, oh, it's not the war with Ukraine. It's the war with NATO. If we didn't start it, NATO missiles were already in Moscow. We know it for sure. That why they tried NATO to conquer all these countries that are now so-called free. They are under NATO, and now they want to move these bases to Donbass and other places and to attack us. So there are people who believe it. But again, to decide how many of them really believe it and how many of them are simply repeating because that's what makes them safe, it's very difficult to say.
Well, toward the end here, I want to ask you maybe two more. And on the subject of Kremlin propaganda, there are many people in the free world in Soviet days who repeated this propaganda. The Soviet Union had many supporters in the free world in those days. I grew up around some of them. I remember, and it was painful and infuriating. And you see and hear the same thing today. The Kremlin lines repeated by people who live in free countries. And this bothers me no end. And it's hard to know what to do about it. I think some people are simply naive, misled, but other people are malicious. And they say that Vladimir Putin is a great Christian leader, a leader of Christian civilization, a leader of the West, standing up for traditional values, when he is a simple tyrant, a killer at home and abroad. I must say, I don't have any wisdom on this, Natan. I just find it upsetting.
Look, I think that those people who are saying, let's try to understand Putin, let's see him, as you said now, as the leader of Christian civilization, it's very difficult for me to believe that they sincerely believe in it. Yeah, the leader of Ukraine at this moment is Jew, but Ukraine as a country is no less Christian than Russia, maybe even more Christian. So it's not the debate about Christianity. There are people who are afraid that if we will not accept the demands, at least partial demands of Putin, there will be war over all the world. There are people who don't want to understand or to learn from the lessons of the past that pacifying the dictator cannot bring peace. That if you decide, okay, let's give him part of Ukraine, the parts of Poland and Baltics, and then Hungary and other will be in danger. Because that is the best proof for dictator that his tactics or his strategy works. So the only way to stop dictator is to resist the dictator. I would say that is relatively easy because at this moment, in spite of disappointments here and there, the Western world finally is united in their understanding that Putin is a big threat and we have to resist. There is a much more alarming thing for me, which started long before this war, that Marxist-Leninist ideology, which was so primitive, and I lived in under this ideology, and I think nobody already believed in it. That ideology meant that all the world is divided into the oppressors and the oppressed, and that oppressors are always wrong, and oppressed are always right. And we have to establish dictatorship of the proletariat to prohibit to the enemies of proletariat, to the capitalists, to speak and to let proletariat to rule, and then we'll have society equal society for everyone. That was primitive ideology, which in the very beginning really many people were caught. Many Jews, by the way, really believed that if the price of creating equal society for everybody is to kill a few hundred capitalists, let's do it. That's what Lenin said. And then they killed millions and millions and millions to create this type of society. Now the Marxism-Leninism is dead. And today again, in the last 10 years in America and in Europe, are coming back the ideologies, which if you replace there the word race by the word class, you have classical Marxism-Leninism, that all the world is oppressors and oppressed, and oppressors are always wrong, and oppressed are always right, and politically correct is to give to speak to oppressor, not to permit to oppressor speak. And of course, I speak about critical race theory and about anti-colonialist theories and anti-Zionist theories. And it really, it reminds me so much this my Soviet past, and the fact that there are so many people who decide better not to speak publicly about our disagreements because it can influence on my career at the university. And that what really frightens me, that the free world can voluntarily become the world of double thinkers, that under the pretext of politically correct, you can censor the views of the people, that people in the universities will be afraid, as I heard it for many years, I am hearing it, that for me, as a liberal Jew, it's better not to express any sympathy to Israel because that will destroy my career in the science, because my professors in mathematics believe that we should not say anything on behalf of Israel. That's one of many examples, but
Can you believe a free country like the United States has Samizdat, even people writing things secretly?
Of course, nobody can go to prison, and lives of people are not under threat. But the fact that voluntarily people can stop expressing their views, being afraid that it will influence their careers, that's frightening enough, because the moment you start compromising with your own freedom in the free world, in America, in Harvard, in business school of Harvard, I'm speaking about real examples that I met, that's frightening. So am I afraid that some people in the West trust Putin? I am concerned. I believe that they don't trust Putin, but they are simply afraid that they'll be involved in some kind of awful wars. So they are wrong. I think more and more leaders in the world said that you have to fight dictator like Putin. But I'm much more concerned by the fact that people agree to accept restrictions of their own freedom and to become double thinkers in the free society, because that's something that you cannot simply fight by your weapons. That's something what is happening inside the society, and you have to deal with it.
To a degree, a fear society. This is a phrase I borrow from you over and over again.
Exactly. Look, I was very proud with my so-called town square test, how you differentiate between free society and fear society. If you can go to the center of the town town and say whatever you think, and are not afraid that you'll be punished for this. You live in the free society. Maybe with many problems, but it's free society. If you're afraid to do it, you live in free society. So it was very simple. And to say, we are still not there. People are not afraid for their life and for their freedom to say whatever they want. But people are already afraid for their careers. And that's like the first step towards free society. So that's really the challenge that we people in the free world has to face it. And it depends on each of us. Are we ready to give part of our freedom and part of our free thinking in order to pacify our opponents and to guarantee our career or not? That's the question.
Here at the end, I want to say this. Putin launched his all-out assault on Ukraine on February 24th, 2022. It is now May 15th, 2023. I am surprised and impressed at the Ukrainians, at their resistance, at their spirit, at their patriotism. This is a great freedom struggle, and they are still standing. I'm very impressed by these people, and I wonder what you think.
Well, I think that the day when Putin declared that Ukraine is not a nation, he revived, he rebuilt the pride of Ukrainian people. And in the end, he helped the Ukrainian people to find their place in the center of the history of the mankind. I think never before Ukraine was so much in the center of the world history as today. Ukraine proves that it is ready, and Ukrainians, specific people of Ukraine, prove that they are ready to fight for their national identity and for their freedom. And they're ready to fight for this and to die for this. They are bringing back to the world nationalism the positive meaning. I was writing a lot about how Israel can be Jewish and democratic state, how it is important to for your freedom, for your strength to fight for your freedom to be national state. And it was, but national state became like a curse. Here, Ukrainians, by their struggle, are rehabilitating the world nationalism and show what is a good national, what is the nationalism which helps you to fight for freedom. At the same time, Russia demonstrates what is the worst of nationalism, nationalism which is used by a cruel dictator in order to guarantee its control over its own people. And of course, Ukraine is lucky to have a great leader. It's almost irony of history that this leader is a proud Jew who is proudly associated, connects himself to Jewish culture and to this, to Israel, and who at the same time is unbelievably strong Ukrainian patriot. So yeah, I think that that's great page in the history of Ukraine and great example for the world to reconnect back this world of freedom and the world of identity.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Jay Nordlinger doing Q&A, whose producer is Madeline Osborne, whose sponsor is Fast Growing Trees. I have loved and admired Natan Sharansky since the 1970s, and nothing has changed. Good to hear from you, sir, and God bless you and your family always.
Thank you, Jay. God bless you.
Till next time, everyone. So long.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.